Come on, load up. Everyone, this is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online. This is TS Radio. Our show tonight is Whistleblowers, and it's brought to you in coordination and presented with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit. That'll be taking place the end of July in Washington, D.C. This is the 6th annual. If you can attend, you should. We're going to be covering some bases again tonight that we've been across before, and we're hoping to get an update. And our first guest this evening is Lawrence Lucas, and he's going to be joined by Ron Cotton and Lisa Donnelly, and I believe I have Lisa on also. Lisa? No, apparently not. So I guess it's just...
Yes, Marty, hello, this is Lisa. I'm sorry,
oh, okay.
I'm on mute. Good evening.
Good evening. Hey, Lisa, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Just old and cold. I'm up here in Minnesota, and I think winter's trying to set in again. And and you know, the older you get, the harder that cold, wet weather is.
Oh,
it
yeah.
is not
I like
good.
The cold.
And but I need to move south where it's warm, maybe to the islands where I could just kind of dry up and wither away and blow away with the wind. That's what I need to do. But anyway, we are going to be touching base tonight and catching up on what's going on at the USDA. Now, as everybody knows, Sonny Perdue has been named, he's former governor of Georgia, has been named to head up the USDA. Now, this is my opinion. I'm speaking for me only here. In my estimation, he's just the reinvention of Vilsack, another Monsanto golden boy that's made his claim to fame with that giant sucking sound you had heard out of Georgia with Sonny Perdue going after Monsanto. Anyway, this is just my thoughts, but we're hoping for some changes here. Lawrence was in a conference meeting this week. We want to touch base on that. Ron's going to add in. Ron Cotton is with us. He's going to add into that. And Lisa Donnelly, of course, everybody, you know Lisa. She's the one that's led the fight for the female firefighters and everybody else in the USDA that had to use the women's bathroom. So, Lawrence, let's start off with you. What's the news and all the news that is news?
Well, there have been a number of things that have occurred, and here again, thank you for allowing the message and the word and the truth about the U.S. Department of Agriculture as it continues to discriminate against minority farmers, women farmers, as well as employees at USDA, and especially the egregious action of that's going on with women, and Lisa will give you an update on that. But I do want to say that we had the coalition had a meeting with Congressman Dwight Evans, and the meeting was very productive. He had his chief of staff on the line because we did the meeting out of Philadelphia, and we also had his staff person in Washington on the line as well. And that told me that he took the meeting very seriously.
Okay.
We shared with him the egregious acts that have been going on for during the Obama administration and still going on today at the U.S. Department of Agriculture against farmers and employees, especially black farmers, and we'll give you some updates on that as the program proceeds. But we were very impressed with the fact that he was honest enough to say that during the meeting, based on the information that was presented, he admitted that he was overwhelmed. Not only overwhelmed, but simply without saying the word appalled, in the absence of that, he indicated that he could not fathom that the many things that we were telling him that has been going on during the Vilsack and Dr. Joe Leonard administration at USDA for the past 8 years, going on nine now under the new administration. He could not believe that so little had been done. And when we told him about the many contacts that we had made in Washington, as well as the groups that are supposed to be concerned and representing farmers, and the groups, individuals at the in the Office of Civil Rights, who had, as you know, has as many complaints against them in the Office of Civil Rights than some of the larger agencies of hundreds, if not thousands. So we thought that that meeting was very productive, and we are hoping that we do get follow-up and that he does do something about the problem. The reason why we had that meeting and it was so important was because he's now a member of the House Agriculture Committee.
Okay.
And we feel as though him coming on the committee and not as tainted with Washington politics as the many as many of the members are. So we're hoping that he will respond in the positive, and we're looking forward to working with his staff and making some of those things happen.
Well, Lawrence, you know, they had that, and it was videotaped, and Lisa, you spoke so eloquently there, that meeting the 1st of December when Joe Leonard was there, and then that lunatic woman from USDA, whoever that hag was, and then and Chavetz, who headed up that committee. Now, this guy's a go-getter, but I see where he's wanting to resign, and I'm trying to find out why. As near as I can figure out, one of the comments I saw that he had made was that what goes on in these agencies, and I think he was referring to USDA most specifically, was so egregious, and that he was getting, you know, just bombed from all directions to shut up and stop these investigations. What do you think is going to happen there? Do you think he will? What do you think is going to happen to that committee if he does in fact resign his seat?
Well, you know, go ahead,
Lisa. No, you go ahead.
Okay. You know, Congressman Chaffetz, you're talking about,
yes,
was just ferocious in that hearing. I was very impressed with his knowledge. We had provided the committee a lot of documentation and names, women's names. You know, like Lauren says, we have the warm bodies. We have the people. It's not just Lawrence and Ron and I saying things are bad out here. These women are coming forward and speaking publicly. And so he had a lot of information. He was well-versed in what the agency had been doing. And so he could tell when they were lying. And it's like
right.
You were talking about Lenny Slago is the woman that you're talking about, the
mm-hmm.
agency deputy chief under Chief Kidwell. She was not honest in a lot of her answers, and Congressman Chaffetz knew it. Congressman Cummings knew it and even called her on it.
Yes.
Eloquently. And Congressman Gowdy was very upset about the way women are being treated. And so when I found out that Congressman Chaffetz was, you know, leaving, I was pretty concerned because he has been leading this charge, and Congressman Cummings, you know, is right there with him, but he's a minority. So I contacted the stopper that we've been dealing with, and said, you know, oh no, you know, what's going to happen? What can become of us? And they have ensured me that if and when Congressman Chaffetz leaves, and it looks like he is leaving, they are not going to, they're not going to leave us behind. They're still with us, and they're still going to work with us. So I was really happy to hear that. And I've been communicating with the committee, you know, a couple times a month, letting them know things that are going on and things that are not happening. So they're still with us. So it'll be tough to see Congressman Chaffetz go because he was such an advocate, but it's good to know that they're still involved.
Well, I think we need to keep the pressure on them to stay involved. And relative to that, Lisa, one of the emails I received before the show today, I have people who email me questions and comments now. It's easier than trying to call in. So, and this came out of Horsehead, New York. And the man writing said, I recently listened to some past shows with the ladies from the forestry. I got sick listening to what they have been through, and even sicker when I realized the USDA is fully aware of what goes on and has not done anything to stop this. Do you think this new boss at USDA will do like Vilsack and just stop all communications from them? What do you think?
Well, you know, he's fairly new, and that remains to be seen. You know, I have concerns. It's been 5 months since the hearing, and, you know, an OIG audit is in the works, and those take months to complete. And that's based on Congressman Chaffetz requesting, you know, the report.
Right.
Getting them to give him a report on everything that they said they were doing and not doing in the hearing. And so this OIG audit is ongoing. I had an interview with the they're not really investigators, they're auditors. There's two branches to the Office of Inspector General in each agency. One does the audits, which compiles reports and recommendations, and the other is the investigative branch with special agents that actually investigate you know, crimes. And so they're doing an audit, and I had the interview just a few weeks ago with the auditors, and it's, you know, it's they're gathering a lot of information. They're speaking to a lot of women that I've you know, given them their names, and we'll just have to wait and see how how much they pull out. You know, the agency's going to do everything they can to hide you know, their information, what they're doing wrong,
right,
from the auditors, and we're doing everything we can to get that information to them. And so we're, you know, we're kind of in a waiting mode to see how that turns out. They said it's going to take 6 to 7 months before they have the report done. So we're looking at the fall before we see a report and recommendations. And then the agency comes back, and because they're just recommendations, they don't have any enforcement capabilities. And that, and so the agency will come back and tell them what they're going to do and not going to do. So that's not always a very successful process.
Well, this is
Marty,
one of the things.
If I could just inject. And therein lies my problem, Marty, because they had an opportunity to send not auditors but investigators out there because all the information we know was credible. So that's therein lies my concern. The timeline, you know, that's too long a time to wait to do something, in my view. I know the government can walk and chew gum at the same time, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So there's no need to wait 7 months to correct the problem
about
women being raped in the workplace. Now, the other thing is, I would certainly like to commend you and commend your audience. They are engaged, they are informed, they're fired up. I'm looking at the emails, and I must commend them in their concerns, and I would encourage them to stay engaged and to stay fired up about this, because the more exposure and pressure we bring to bear, I think the quicker we'll get this done. My other concern is Congressman Chaffetz. The reason that he was so effective is because they cannot compromise him, couldn't compromise him. They couldn't buy him off.
Right.
And they couldn't fool him with the lies. So I'm hoping that we get someone just as astute, just as powerful, just as insightful, and just as determined as he is to get this done. I was thoroughly impressed. I haven't seen a hearing like that in many years where a congressman or an elected official really went after the issue with the objective of fixing it.
Exactly. I agree with you, Ron, 100%. And this is why I think that behind the scenes, known to maybe we never will know, but I think this man got jumped on. I really do, and cornered. I think he probably they came short of threatening him. What happened in that hearing on December 1st was not supposed to happen. And the reason I say that, and I believe that, is when you listen to the answers that the Joe Lenneman and this Lagos woman gave, they were such canned, scripted, amounted to nothing guesstimations. This is how they're used to testifying, if you want to call it that, is just slinging BS. And everybody goes, oh, okay. And this time it didn't work. And you could, I love to watch people's faces in these situations because it'll tell you they were shocked. Both of it. Lenneman looked like he wanted to get up and run out of the room. They were not at all used to or accustomed to being set upon like this committee did. Cummins went after him. Chavetz went after him. Gowdy went after them. And at one point, wasn't it Gowdy who said, I don't believe a word you're saying. And I almost fell off my chair. I thought, what did he say? Yes, you know, because you knew there. I mean, you wanted to. I know you couldn't hear me, but you should have been able to, because I was jumping up and down and hollering here at home. I thought, yes, finally. And you're absolutely right, Ron. There is no reason this should take 7 months. But this is very telling in that they have to, like you say, they could have sent investigators. They didn't. They're going another route because they have no control over the USDA. The only control they have is the funding we are forced to give them. And I have said this, I'll keep saying it. This is a privately owned corporation. It is contracted to the federal corporation as a government services agency. But they make their own rules, their own regulations. This is why this has gone on like it has, because the government is actually powerless to tell them to do anything. Now, what could happen here is the Department of Justice could have stepped in here and gone after them for civil rights violations, for discrimination. I mean, for God's sake, there's a case there that is just mind-blowing. But there again, they sat silent. They sat silent. And
well,
I would be
–
go ahead, Lisa. Go ahead.
I was going to say, yes, I agree. And not only that, Marty, the Department of Justice represents the agency. Whenever an employee files in federal court, when they step outside of the administrative EEOC process and file in federal court, who's representing the agency against them? The Department of Justice.
Yes,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, and so it's even a conflict of interest for the DOJ to step in and start investigating because they're investigating the very things that they're representing the agency against. And so, they're basically toothless when it comes to anything like that. Now, one of the things I've done, because I'm not just going to sit here for 8 months and wait for a report. We're not doing that.
Good for you.
You know, we initially had meetings with the liaison, the transition liaison, and we asked, you know, for further meetings, which we're not getting. And our first letter, the coalition's first letter to Secretary Perdue goes out next week. And what we're going to do is asking for a meeting with Secretary Perdue. So we'll see what comes of that. The other thing is I told the Office of Inspector General that I was not going to wait for this report and recommendation, that there were people suffering, that there are women being, you know, sexually assaulted. We have sexual predators that are managers out there in the Forest Service, and something has to be done now. And we have one situation that's so egregious. Like I mentioned to you this to you before. It's a manager, a high-level manager, that has done such egregious sexual misconduct to his female subordinates, that they just covered it up. The agency covered it up at high levels and promoted him. And I told him, I said, I am not waiting 8 months for you to send a recommendation to USDA to investigate this. And so I did a whistleblower complaint to the branch of investigation at OIG, and they're currently doing an investigation on him. And I just last week had my interview with the special agent. But what they're doing with this guy, I mean, first of all, he did egregious sexual misconduct to these women, you know, scared them to death. They were afraid to come to work. When it was reported to even the regional forester, to cover it up, they relocated him with a promotion, put him back working over women again, and he has started the same type, from what we know anyway, not quite as egregious. I think he's under the radar a little bit now, but still, you know, sexual misconduct. And they've sent him to training this spring so that he can be on the incident command, the fire incident command staff, which means he'll be going out to fires this summer, and there's probably going to be a lot of them. And I was on a Type 1 fire team, so I can tell you from experience, you go into remote locations. There was one time when we flew into Boise, and we were bused 4 hours somewhere in the wilds of Idaho. And you're remote and you're isolated. And this man's going to be out there with women, working with women, and they're not going to have anyone to turn to. There's no law enforcement. There's no one that cares. And he can have his way and do whatever he wants. And they may have no way to report it, maybe afraid to report it. And so they're putting women at risk with this guy still. Knowing what he's like, they're still allowing him to do this. It's a liability for the agency. It's a risk for the women. And this is what's still continuing. And it, like I said, it's been 5 months since that hearing. The agency knows. They knew before the hearing. But they know that we all know now publicly what's happening and that they know what's happening. And they're still not doing a damn thing. It still goes on. I'm still getting phone calls. Women are still being accosted. There's retaliation, termination. I'm so busy dealing with these issues, I can barely turn around. And nothing is changing. The same people are still there. Lenise Lago is still in her position. She lied to that committee. Why is she still in her position? But nothing has changed.
Well, see, I figured that's why Linneman resigned. He was he got caught in so much crap during that hearing, and 2 weeks later, he walks out. I figure what was about to happen was somebody, there were going to be some repercussions against him. He took off running. Most cowards do that. Now, with this gentleman you're talking about that's back out in the forest with these women, has anybody done a background check to see if there's been other complaints outside of forestry, you know, sexual harassment, stalking? Has he ever had other? Oh, good God.
And working with the union. And we found that, for example, there's allegations that he stalked a 17-year-old girl in the community, that he went to the local bar and was calling his female subordinates fat pig and profane names, profane gender names, that he tried to kiss on the women, members of the public. It was so bad that the bartender contacted the forest supervisor, the boss that runs the forest, and complained to him about the man, and also contacted some of the women for whatever it was. I don't know what they actually, this specific incident, what the bartender heard, but he was so concerned, he called these women at their homes and said, you need to be careful. You might want to contact the sheriff. And all of this is known to the agency, and nothing was done, and he's still managing women.
Jiminy Chris, this is disgusting.
And if you'll remember, when Congressman Chaffetz said to Renice Lago, I want to know information about the agency promoting sexual harassers. She said, we don't do that. And he said, well, we have information that you do. Well, here is a perfect example, Marty, a perfect example of this.
Yep. Yep.
So it's being investigated now, but I have other, other issues, incidents. And so I decided, well, I'm just going to start doing whistleblowers on each one, send them to OIG and get all these investigations started myself, because USDA is doing nothing. Forest Service is doing nothing. They're acting as if the hearing never happened.
I wanted to just let all three of you know, I'm watching my call board here, and of course, phone numbers are all listed, but I have right now 19 from area code 202 blocked. Those are government numbers. They're listening. They're listening. So y'all, if you got anything to say, call on in. I mean, hit that number 1 and we'll put you right on air, and let's see
we'd
what
like
you got
to know
to
what
say.
You're doing. Yes. We'd like to know what you're doing, because I don't see anything other than they recently created at USDA Office of Civil Rights some quote unquote initiatives, new initiatives, and there's nothing in those initiatives that is going to have a positive effect on the employees in the field that's going to stop the sexual harassment, the discrimination, or any of the things that we've been telling them are going on, and that's all they're doing. In fact, just last week, I was so irked about this. They've decided, the Forest Service has decided, they are no longer going to hire contractors to put on their prevention of sexual harassment training. They're going to have employees do it.
Oh,
now,
maybe they can get these guys to do it. Lord knows they're experts. They can tell them how to do it.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, Marty. They're experts at it.
Yes.
They're good at sexual. That's the problem.
Yeah, exactly.
So I immediately contacted the Committee on Oversight and Government Reform and shared that information with them and said, first of all, sexual harassment workshops are difficult, based on the subject matter, based on your audience. It's a difficult thing to put on, even for a professional contractor that does it. And now they're going to have employees who have no experience, and they may not even be good. It's an employee, a biologist or someone is going to put this on. A civil rights officer is putting this on, and what they've done is they've weakened and minimized their prevention of sexual harassment training at a time when they should be strengthening these things, since the hearing and everything and the OIG audits and investigations, they should be looking at ways to strengthen this training. Instead, they're weakening it, and that's a tone being sent to all employees that we don't.
That's exactly what's being said. We don't care. Don't ripple the waters.
And Marty, that should shed some light on your listener's question about the new secretary.
Yes.
Is he really going to do something? Because allowing something like this to proceed, I think that gives you your answer.
Yes,
and I think,
exactly.
I can tell you from experience, he's been briefed on what the situation is, and he, rather than demonstrating leadership, he's letting things go as they've always gone. So that should tell you whether or not he's really engaged and whether or not he's really developing any leadership on this issue and where he stands on this, on women being raped in the workplace, on minority issues. That should tell you where he stands and tell you what he's going to do. Because he has the authority as the secretary to intervene and hold people accountable. Training has little value, Marty. You and I both know that. So do your listeners.
Yep.
But if you fire somebody for raping a woman in the workplace, that will help to correct them.
Yeah. One of our emails that we got prior to the show was from Dalton, Georgia, and regarding the new secretary, and it says, We are very familiar with Perdue. Don't get your hopes up for any changes with him as the top guy at USDA. Could you ask Mr. Lucas if there has been any efforts by the new administration at USDA to reach out to them, and if there is any comments about what they are going to do about all those complaints that piled up that Vilsack ignored? And they go on. This is their comment. Perdue is a snake oil salesman, part of what was known as the Georgia Mafia, as he is known here. We know why he was picked for this job. As long as his bank account grows, he will do whatever they want. I say this was a comment from someone who emailed in from Dalton, Georgia. Lawrence, has anybody reached out to you, or have you had to make the effort?
Well, thank you. I think what we have done, the coalition is adamant about bringing about change under any administration. We're a pragmatic organization that demands accountability and fair treatment for minority farmers, black farmers, and employees. And it doesn't make any difference what the administration is. We have reached out to the new administration, and we did get some communication from a person working on this transition team who was working with us and was listening to us, and we did have the opportunity. And now this is, and we were very impressed with that, with the fact that they did follow up and they did listen to us and they did look at some of our issues and we did have meetings. The problem that we have at USDA, and I think the problem exists in many of the federal agencies, that many of the needed required administration officials from under and assistant secretaries, from administrators, from other political appointees like legal assistants and administrative assistants, for example, in the program areas, they do not have staff people to carry on and carry out and implement the programs that needs to be implemented during this transition period. Not only in the Office of Civil Rights is this happening, and we are very concerned about that, it's happening throughout USDA. And I'm hearing from some of the other agencies, representatives and colleagues around government are saying the same thing. So we have a very serious problem in Washington because of the political environment that now exists, where the focus on needed things such as infrastructure, tax reform, health care, and other kinds of programs which are much more important that will create jobs and help America, the middle class and the other classes of Americans who depend on our Congress and our leaders to do the right thing. That is not happening. I would say that we have a conundrum, a logjam in Washington in terms of getting things done. However, we are not sitting back and waiting for them to do what they have to do. We're going to continue to push forward. We're going to talk to the committees, both political and otherwise. We're going to talk to the media when they wish to speak to us to uncover these things. But we are prepared to meet with the new administration and help them to do what they need to do to stop all the discrimination and the abuse that's going on against farmers and employees. And to give you another point, that just like Lisa on the employment side, we are working to change things within the USDA and its policies and its administration and the Office of Civil Rights. Farmers, black farmers, people are claiming that the problem of minority farmers, especially black farmers, have been solved. If that be the case, that's not true, because you have a group of black farmers filing in court. I talked to a farmer and their representative filing in court in the state of Oklahoma You have another situation where you have 40, almost 50-some farmers filing a case on behalf of socially disadvantaged farmers in the Court of Federal Claims. These cases are being filed around the country. They have been successfully in North Carolina to some degree orchestrating legal action on behalf of Tillery Farms, Gary Grant, and his farm, as well as the Wises, who were thrown off of their land. So we are going to continue to work with the farm groups, with the unions, and with others to make sure, and we will do it with or without them, to make sure that this government and this administration adhere to the laws, make sure that cases are processed, make sure they're investigated, make sure farmers and employees get the chance to get ADR or settlement of their cases, make sure their cases are even filed properly and recorded properly. We have serious problems with that. We have a farmer in Alabama, for example, have 7 cases in the past 3 to 5 years, and he just got a notification for the number, case number, only a few weeks ago. So this idea that things are fixed and everything is all right in civil rights, which we are hearing from politicals and people from that represent these advocacy groups, all the way from the NAACP and others, who feel as though everything is fine while Black farmers are losing their land, they're losing their wealth, and employees at USDA are treated terribly, not only in the Forest Service, but in other agencies, especially in the case of the Office of Civil Rights, who have more cases against them than some of the agencies. So that is the coalition position, and that's where we are. But we are hoping that in the next 1 or 2 months that they have a staff, just as they have staffed up the secretary's office, staff up the rest of the office and start getting things done and holding these abusers accountable.
Okay, hey, Marty, this leaves me. Oh, you go ahead, Ron. You go ahead.
Here's what that means. We first have to commend the incoming administration, the Trump administration, because one of their transition staffers did meet with us. She's a very nice young lady. She's been very cordial, very friendly, very respectful, and she did listen to our issues. However, because you don't have staff in place, the Obama approach to things, the Obama administration approach to things, is the prevailing approach of the day, which was nothing, to do nothing, to listen to no one. Let me give you an example. In Georgia, at the Georgia State Office, I have an African-American employee, a disabled veteran, who was pretty much stomped on as an employee simply because he was an African-American and was told to his face that was the reason why. Now, what was the recourse? Well, the position of the prior administration was to try to bury these issues and do nothing about it. So that's why you have the situation that you have today. You have people coming in, and there's no staff there to fully implement what's needed, the new direction needed to turn this thing around. So that's what it translates to when you don't have the staff that you need. Although we do have contact with the new administration at USDA, you don't have the horses to pull the cart.
There you go. There's two emails that came in today that I think are relevant to what we're talking right now. And I, of course, am here in rural Minnesota, so I see this firsthand. And it says, but this email came from Mankato, which is south of me, quite a distance. It says, we are witnessing the takeover of family farms here by Monsanto and Delta Pioneer. I know that complaints have been filed with USDA about the underhanded way the family farmers are treated. we can't get any loans now to keep us going, and Monsanto has goon squads all over the place. Yes, they do. That Purdue guy has said in the past that we don't need family farms and that they are outdated. Could you ask Mr. Lucas, and you too, Ron, if he has heard anything to indicate that this will end and that family farms will survive? And the second question here was from Elkhorn, Indiana, and is, what do you think will happen to whistleblowers under Trump?
Well, I can deal with the first question about the family farms. Normally what would happen is when a new administration, a new secretary comes in, they put a hold on any foreclosures or anything that would adversely impact farmers.
Okay.
To my knowledge to date, that has not happened. That has not happened.
Okay.
Simply has not happened. So it doesn't bode well.
No.
About the best honest answer I can give you.
You know, I was talking to Lawrence here the other day, and I first became familiar with USDA back when they passed that fake food safety bill back in 2010. That had been one of the slickest, most underhanded things I ever saw anybody do, and that was Dirty Harry Reid went into the Senate chamber, and everybody's fighting, screaming, don't pass the Food Modernization Act because it was a forced export bill. 80% has to go into export. We shouldn't be exporting anything that we need here and bringing in only what we can't produce. But what he did was he went into the Senate chamber with S-510, which could not pass either house. And he gutted an old recycling bill, put S-510 in as an amendment. 99 Democrats and Republicans voluntarily vacated that Senate chamber. Harry Reid cast one lone vote without objection, and S-510 became law, the food modernization thing. I know how these people work. I know how rotten and lousy this outfit can be. And I had told Lawrence when we spoke that they had started on the black farmers, viewing them as the weakest link, but that they would move up the food chain. And we are seeing that here now in the area where I live. I don't know of any black farmers. These are generational farms. They have been here, some of them more than 100 years. They are being lost to these big corporations. I think we are witnessing what is about to be the end of family and independent farming across the board. Purdue has stated that he thinks these are antiquated and no longer needed, that corporate farming can do this far more efficiently and economically. And I think what will happen is this. Just to drive this home and get everybody to buy this, the more they take and the more they produce of this non-nutritious, genetically modified, herbicide, pesticide-drenched crap that we see in the stores, they'll drop the price way down. And people vote with their wallet. They're going to think this is a good deal. They'll wipe out as many family and independent farmers as they can, take as much land as they can, and then everything will go through the roof. Now, that's what I think. Now, do you think I'm wrong?
Well, I think there's evidence afoot and out there, Marty, that agrees, and there are a lot of farmers who feel and is sympathetic to your view. We know that it's very important of having small farmers in this country. We know that if, in fact, that if the corporations, and this is just simple English and simple mathematics that we're using, if they buy the land and they have the numbers and the acres to do so, at the same time putting out and running out of business and partnering with USDA to continue to steal and foreclose on small farmers, it's going to have an awesome impact on those people of low end and middle income. And we need to have, and it's important that we have, small farmers around this country and keep them in business.
I agree.
Because if you, and I've said this on your show before, if we turn our economy over to the corporations, there'll be one day, and I said this many years ago at the fairness hearing for the black farmers, if we do not care for black farmers and try to work with and save black farmers and fund their farms and give them the resources, all the farmers get the resources they need, we're going to be paying in 10 to 15 years, we're going to be paying $10 for an apple. And that's
yep.
a quote from my testimony. And I'm just seeing this happen. And that's one reason why we fight so hard and work so diligently with the minority farmer groups to try to keep them afloat and make sure they're treated like all the other farmers are being treated, big, small, or otherwise. So we're very sympathetic, and we are very well aware of that. That's one reason why we work so hard in the area of civil rights to try to keep and do the best we can with making sure that farmers are not discriminated against and treated fairly and get the programs and services that other farmers get. So I must say that it's not a good picture that we can paint right now, but that doesn't mean that we have to roll over and give up. We have to stay strong, work with farmers, work with the farm organizations, and especially those farm organizations that have the best interests of small and independent farming in this country.
Okay, we are up to 27. Yeah, just saying, we are up to 27 listeners from area code 202. So we know who y'all are. Why don't you give us a buzz in, flag me, we'll open you right up. And let's have a conversation. Don't sit there and lurk. Come on in. Just letting you know.
Hey, Marty.
Yes,
just,
Ron.
Just a personal note. My respect and appreciation for farmers, and I'm talking about family farming, goes very deep. As I looked into my own family history, I'm a cotton from Rowan County, North Carolina. My great-great-great-grandfather was a farmer. So my love for farming and my love for farmers, I was born into it, okay?
Yep. Did we lose Ron?
No, yeah. No. I'm still here.
Okay.
I thought it heard a click there. I thought I lost you.
Go ahead.
So family farm should never go away.
No.
Never go away.
Well, and they have always been the backbone of the economy. Agriculture is the backbone of this economy. Now, they're trying to turn it into the military-industrial complex. It's driving our economy. But the fact of the matter is we are only as strong as our agricultural community is. And when we lose control of food production, and by losing control, I mean it gets converted over to these corporations who have an eye not so much on how many people can we feed, but how much money can we make. We're losing ground. We are losing ground. We have got to keep fighting these people. I just, it makes me angry. I got another comment I wanted to share here quickly. This one is from Des Moines, Iowa. And it says, after listening to several of these shows with Mr. Lucas, I called the NAACP and asked point blank why they were not supporting the black farmers in their battle to get equal treatment from USDA. They said they hung up on me. Could you ask Mr. Lucas if he knows why NAACP is not working with him and the others to contact and work with Congress?
This is an example of how the organizations that are supposed to be working in the best interests of their constituents and their membership. The NAACP in Alabama, as well as the national office in Washington, they are more concerned with their own public-private interests, their own interests. And we've gone to the NAACP and asked for their assistance, and the farmers have sat down and had meetings with them, both in Alabama and in Washington. And I would say that the reasons why we are having so much trouble during the Obama administration, because those organizations that were supposed to be looking out for our best interests, women's organizations, I'm including in this, I'm including the civil rights organizations that have historically supposed to care for minorities, especially blacks as well, and even the farm organizations and their advocates have actually rolled over during the administration and allowed discrimination and abuse to continue because they benefit at the pain and suffering of farmers as well as employees. And what I mean by that is they get money and financial support as from the Department of Agriculture for their silence. And that has been a major problem during the last administration as to why civil rights has gone in the tank and is worse now than it was during the Bush administration. And the email that you got is a prime example. They hang up and do not help the farmers, and they do not help employees. And I'm saying that is not typical of just one organization that should be working for civil and human rights in this country. It's really shameful.
It is. One last comment here from Henderson, Indiana. It says, Monsanto is running the USDA. Does your guest think there is any chance we can boot them out? Also, as a former USDA employee for Indiana, I know that whistleblowers are in the crosshairs. Minority employees will be hardest hit because they are seen as disposable. That sounds terrible, but it is true. The only people less disposable at USDA is women. My God, how they hate women. Lisa, you want to respond to that one?
Well, yeah, that's true. It's well said. The amount of animus towards women and people of color, people with disabilities, is epidemic. It's widespread, it's severe, and it's completely ignored. The retaliation against whistleblowers is one of the biggest problems that the agency has. And EEOC statistics show that the largest number of complaints they have are for reprisal, because reprisal is a culture in the agency and other agencies too. And as an example, I can give you the 8 female firefighters that filed the class action complaint, Bush v. Purdue. Now, out of those 8, only 3 still work for the agency. 5 of them have either been terminated or quit or have gone to other departments, not just other agencies within USDA, but other departments like Department of Interior, because of the reprisal, because their careers were just decimated. And, you know, they're whistleblowers, and that's what happens to whistleblowers. And it's only going to get worse, I think. I don't know if you've been watching the budget, but USDA is taking one of the biggest budget hits. They're taking it 21% hit, and Secretary Perdue sent out a recent video to employees letting them know that there are going to be, you know, there's going to be downsizing, there's going to be positions lost. And when that happens, the viciousness doubles, triples against women and minorities, because they're in management's eyes, they're on the low end of the totem pole. So they're going to be the first to go. So we're going to see an uptake in EEO complaints, in Merit Systems Protection Board complaints, in whistleblower complaints, and then, of course, then the retaliation will be on the upswing too. And the agency uses that. They use it to shake the tree and get rid of employees before they even have to start the downsizing. That's a pattern in practice. And just in the last few months, I've had an upswing in disciplinary actions against employees in the Forest Service. And I was, at first I was curious, why am I getting this glut of disciplinary actions, you know, suspensions, terminations, all of a sudden? And then it dawned on me, because the agency's preparing for downsizing. And they're shaking that tree and trying to get rid of people through, you know, adverse actions, which are much easier than performance, and scaring people, because people will see that and they'll just leave and you know, quit, go into private or go to another department. So already I see that happening. So the status of whistleblowers, unless Secretary Perdue does something to help us change this culture, the retaliation is going to increase. It's not going to decrease.
Lisa, I agree with you on that, and I'll tell you, I've been watching where they're going to be cutting billions, apparently, out of USDA, and of course, the first place they're going to hit is the parts of that agency that are causing them the most problems, and that's going to be the Civil Rights Division and others like it. This is what's going to get hit. It's going to be scaled down so bad. And I'm predicting that what's going to happen is there's going to be a change in the regulations that will make access to that office and filing a complaint so impossible that you won't be able to get it done. And this, and then they're going to report that, well, we didn't have any complaints. You talked also, Lisa, earlier. I just got a few minutes here, but I wanted to get this in about the DOJ representing the USDA, and this is why they won't intervene when they see them breaking the law. One of the things I have learned in the issues I've dealt with is I talked to the Secretary of State's office and the Attorney General's office here in the state of Minnesota on another issue, and I was just really angry, and I said to the woman I'm speaking to, why won't you help people? This is, you know, the public is being harmed here. And I was told point blank, we're not here to protect the public. We are here to protect the government from you. And I see the same thing with the DOJ. They're not there to make sure things are going. They're there to protect the USDA from you, from the farmers, from the women. This is such a sick system. I can't believe it. I absolutely – and we're paying all of these people.
I think – absolutely correct. And just to add to what you just said, not only do you have the Office of the Justice Department defending USDA, you have the Office of General Counsel within the USDA. They are the ones that are protecting these abusers and making sure there's no accountability. So the internal workings of the Office of General Counsel at USDA is a major part of the problem. And if they begin to control the process, civil rights process turned over to them, then things will really go belly up in civil rights.
Yep.
But we will be active in that regard. But that's a very serious problem that we have, and that's what's facing us today.
Yes. I agree. Yes, I agree.
That's the main problem we have with the female firefighter class complaint, is that the Office of General Counsel is refusing to sit down with us and come to a resolution. You know, we've let them know the women aren't looking for a lot of money in this situation. The women want to sit down with the agency and collaborate and come up with ideas, with solutions that can change this culture and make the work environment work for women, and so they can be successful. And the agency is not interested in doing that at all. And
no.
You know, if we were asking for millions of dollars and millions of dollars in programs, I could see legitimately them coming back and saying, well, you know, the budget, we're not interested, this is not the time. But we have come up with very cost-effective ideas on how to make changes, and they won't even talk to us about it. And Office of General Counsel is the number one obstruction there.
Well, we have got less than 1 minute left here. I want to thank Ron Cotton, Lawrence Lucas and Lisa Donnelly for being our guests this evening. This was really a good conversation. And to our lurkers from area code 202, don't be shy. Call in. We'd love to talk to you. The next time we're on, I'll give you a special number if you need it, you know, and but jump right on in here. We'd like to hear what you got to say. We'll be back next Thursday night with another episode of Whistleblowers. Again, thank you, all three of you, for being my guests this evening. This was tremendous. Good night, everybody.
Thank you, Marty.
Thank you, Marty.
Yep.
Thank you.